Steve, why don't you kind of lead us off what you want us to do this morning?
Yeah, I think this morning we've got the folks from Clifton & Company here and the risk management people. We'll ask that we stop at a quarter till. Kay has a couple of items that she needs to bring before the committee today to get them out of the way and prepare for some other things. So if we could stop at a quarter till and let Kay have in the last 15 minutes.
Okay. We'll do it.
That's what those items are.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good, Darrell.
Mr. Chairman, the area we're going to cover today is the Risk Management Division. We're going to depart a little bit from our regular schedule to make it a special presentation to you, but let me give a little bit of introduction to you. Page 44 is the budget that we're going to be looking at, but for a little while we're not going to really be dealing with the information on these pages. We have, in General Services today, the responsibility for three insurance activities. First of all, we buy special commercial policies for various coverages that the state needs. I think we actually have 96 commercial coverages, all the way from aircraft to marine, railroad protective, and other things which I'm not all that familiar with. We self-insure our property through the restoration fund. So all the buildings, automobiles, property, we self-insure through the restoration fund. General Services acts as the underwriter, and it also acts as the adjuster on that activity. Then we have the tort liability program, which covers the tort acts of the state's officers, which is also a self-insurance program. In this program, General Services acts only as the underwriter, does not do the adjusting. The adjusting is handled by the Attorney General in the Liability Claims Division of the Attorney General's Office. For, I think, several biennia, there has been a concern by the Executive Department, the Legislative Fiscal Office, and a number of legislators that there were some real serious problems in the tort liability program. And in the last session, the governor had a bill in that would transfer the Liability Claims Division from the Attorney General's Office to General Services in order to deal with some of these organizational fragmentation concerns that have been around for a couple of years. The Attorney General also had a bill in, the prior Attorney General had a bill in, which would have transferred the function out of General Services to a new division of the Attorney General's Office and consolidated over there. So we've had a organizational concern for a number of years. And that basic concern has been that there's fragmentation of accountability and fragmentation of authority and some excessive expenses as a consequence of that fragmentation. Well, during the last session, it became apparent that we were going to have a stalemate kind of a battle between the Executive Department of General Services and the Attorney General. And a compromise, if you will, was struck that perhaps it ought to be deferred for another 2 years until we could get a better handle on the problems. And so those bills just languished and died. When I appeared before the committee to talk about the insurance section, though, we amended the governor's budget and asked for, and the legislature authorized, funding for a special study. And that study was to bring in outside insurance industry folks that would look at the whole insurance program and recommend what changes ought to be made. Once the legislature authorized the funding, we then proceeded to set up the structure for this study. General Services actually had the money and had the responsibility for it, but it was important that all the parties involved in the program have a real participating role in the study to make sure that it took into account all the concerns that everybody had and that it didn't just turn out to be a General Services turf issue and everybody else was left out. So we forged a steering committee, a policy committee, if you will, that would direct the evolution of the study. And in addition to myself, representing General Services, we had the Attorney General, we had the League of Oregon Cities, and the Association of Oregon Counties. So there were four votes on this policy committee, and General Services had only one of the four votes. The steering committee selected Clifton & Company to actually conduct the study. They are a professional consulting firm for the private sector and the public sector to come in and look at specific insurance problems that exist in an organization. The Clifton & Company was selected by the steering committee. It was the Justice Department's strong feeling that Clifton & Company should be selected after a competitive selection process that we went through. The Justice Department also asked that risk managers from Oregon companies, public and private sector, join the steering committee to advise on the evolution of the study. And without insulting Clifton, who did an excellent job, the risk managers were really there to make sure that the consultant was moving in the direction of the work that we wanted done, and we had a group of Oregon folks here that were actually doing risk management work that could participate in the study and make sure we were really getting the real questions dealt with. In other words, we didn't want a boilerplate, we wanted something tailored to Oregon state government. And these risk managers were selected by the Justice Department. Clifton did its study, and that's what we're going to spend the next 45 minutes on, is letting Clifton come up here and tell you what their recommendations were. Their instructions were to deal with the issues, to forget about the politics, to forget about pleasing either General Services or the Justice Department, to get in and find out what was wrong, and to come in with recommendations whether they thought they would be acceptable to us or not politically, just to attack the issues. The study was completed. The study has been reviewed by the League of Oregon Cities, which endorses the study. They are endorsing the recommendations. The study was reviewed by the Association of Oregon Counties. They are endorsing the recommendations. The risk managers selected by the Justice Department are endorsing the Clifton recommendations. They have been embodied in the governor's recommended budget, and so I would, and I also would say that, that many, many of the recommendations are endorsed by the Justice Department. There are some that there are still some issues to be settled, but I think many of the recommendations outside of the area of who has responsibility for the claims function are shared by the Justice Department. So there's really good feeling that this was a well-done study. And with that introduction, what I'd like to do is to ask Jim Murphy, the vice president for Clifton & Company, who was the on-site project manager, actually did the work, to come forward and present his perspective on these recommendations. And I've told him to lay it out the way he sees it, and there has been no prior editing about what he can or cannot say. This is his perspective.
Okay.
Jim.
Thank you, Darryl. And thank you, Darryl, for the promotion. I'm an assistant vice president, but I'm gentlemen, this morning I would like to begin by kind of showing you the book that embodies the report that we put together. The many of the budgetary requests before you came from recommendations made in this document. So I'd like to begin by talking very briefly about, Darryl has given the background of how we came on board, a little, for just a moment, how the project was conducted, and then talk about some of the highlights of the recommendations. I'm not going to try and go through all of it. It would be dreary and a little bit boring, but we'll try and hit some of the high spots. It was about this time last year, I guess the beginning of March, that we began what was a 90-day project. It ran from March until beginning of June. During that time, I think we were, either myself or my colleague on the claim side, probably spent at least 6 weeks on site here in Salem. We did several things. We undertook an extensive file review, all of the insurance policy contracts, all of the written procedures, and we went through literally every open claim suit, every open claim file, not just the suits, but the non-suit claims, to audit the way in which they were handled, to to assess the adequacy of their present status. We also interviewed literally every staff member that had anything to do with the operation. And we interviewed many interested parties, whether it was the advisory committee, risk management personnel, all of the people, interested parties from the local public bodies who participate in that portion of the fund to kind of get at their interests and concerns. We talked with, kind of as we went along, we were drawn into different areas. We talked, for example, to a gentleman down at the Department of Governmental Research at OSU to help us research some of the constitutional and legal issues that we weren't really competent to deal with and had to have sorted out for us. We consulted with the casualty actuary, for example, at the Commerce Department, the Insurance Commissioner's Department, to give us some insight on how some of the cost allocation and so on had been developed in the past. We also brought up, because it was a little out of our area of expertise, a group by the name of Risk Sciences Group, which are a risk-related computer firm. Their entire specialty is the development of software programs and for use as a risk management tool. And they came up essentially to evaluate and critique the current LRIS program, which is the risk management or the claims management information system in place. So that was incorporated in the report. Finally, and I guess most importantly, we kind of insisted that this not be our study to come in and be, you know, presented to the state, but rather that it be a process that everybody involved come along and be part of this. So we conducted several meeting sessions where we'd sit for 3 or 4 hours with the entire steering committee, advisory committee, and so on. And one day we insisted that we all lock up for a full-day workshop and bring in sandwiches and so on. And the reason was really twofold. We wanted to have everybody's help to be sure that what we were talking about was practical. You know, we were coming in with a heavy background in risk management discipline, but you have to make that feasible and practical for the organization in which you're addressing. So we wanted to be sure that we had a consensus on the practicality. And secondly, we wanted to develop and educate the people who were involved so that this wouldn't just be a written document, but this would be something that they had come to understand, and the reasons, the documentation, the written word, you know, often doesn't quite do the trick. We also, and kind of the end of the preamble here, we operated under a couple of constraints. One was that this is entitled the Tort Liability Insurance Program Review. The Restoration Fund, per se, was out of our purview. But as we mentioned in the introduction here, and as I think will become obvious, it was important, ultimately, that we address that, at least on a broad brush issue, or on a broad brush basis. Secondly, we were asked, I think for very good reason, not to jump right in and talk about big picture problems, reorganization, restructuring, and, you know, if we ruled the world, this would be the organizational chart, but rather to deal with the nitty-gritty, day-to-day issues, see what we could do to clean those up first, and secondarily, if need be, address some broader organizational issues. Again, as I think it will become fairly obvious, we were ultimately drawn to the point where we had to do that, and I think it was the consensus of the entire group that we had to make that leap from tinkering with the current mechanism to addressing a revamp. With that introduction, I'd like to talk for just a few minutes about some of the highlights of the things that we found. And I'm using these illustratively. They're not exhaustive, but just some to give the committee some feeling for the kinds of issues that came to light. We found, as an overall statement, that the people who were doing the work on the Tort Liability and Restoration Fund were an energetic, dedicated bunch of people who had really responded to crisis legislation and done a whale of a job for 4 or 5 years. It was, we came in, I think, expecting a worse situation than we actually found. But they were, I think, almost fatally doomed to have some real procedural and organizational flaws for about three reasons. First, there was simply not enough professional personnel brought to bear upon the program. In the Department of General Services, the manager of the insurance section was a fine state employee for many years, but who had no insurance or risk management background. He was subsequently assisted by another gentleman who did have some insurance background, but he had been a personal lines insurance agent selling homeowners and personal automobile insurance. And that background, I think, led him to pick up some on-the-job training that stood him very well in his job, but he didn't have any professional educational perspective to bring to and really add to the program. In the Department of Justice, I think at the outset it's fair to say that they had to respond in just as much a crisis mode. They didn't have a whole lot of insurance defense attorneys over there. Had to find them, bring them on board. Didn't have any claims adjusters, had to find them. And again, you were responding without any high-level professional expertise to bring to bear. So this was one real problem. Related to that, I think, was the fact that for many reasons, perhaps, the program had become rather isolated or insular. None of the people, to my knowledge, that we interviewed were really active in local trade industry or trade association circles, for example, the Risk and Insurance Managers Society or the Claims Adjusting Societies and so on. They may have had membership, but they weren't participating. So what had happened was it had become, I think, procedurally and from an intellectual perspective, it had become a little ingrown. They weren't getting the input from their colleagues and so on, even to the point of subscription to relevant trade publications. It was minimal, nominal, and we were just kind of running on our own little track without any perspective. Finally, there were some inherent problems related to the split structure that Darrell referred to at the beginning, and I think those will become obvious as we go on. I won't belabor them here, but we had a very important portion of the program administered in one department and an equally important portion independently operating in another department, and for a good number of reasons, and most of them kind of on the human personality level, they weren't talking to each other very well, if at all. In fact, there may well have been some antagonism. So those were kind of the three critical flaws, if you will, that led to some of these kinds of problems that I'm going to enumerate now. We first audited in some detail the 90-some-odd insurance policies. So that's not exactly accurate. We audited the liability portion, the tort portions. What came from that was some 20 pages of detailed recommendations. The portfolio was ragged, to put it mildly. There were gaps, there were overlaps, there were some serious ambiguities, there were some coverages that probably should never have been purchased, that was inconsistent with the self-insured philosophy. Certainly not going to bore anyone with the details of those nitpickings, but we did feel rather strongly that we made the recommendation that additional resource was needed to address that problem. Either a much higher level insurance or risk management executive, which is the way that it has ultimately moved, and or assistance from the Attorney General's office, who, although they handled the claims, had no input from a legal professional expertise standpoint on the insurance portfolio. There was no review by legal counsel at all, and or a periodic audit by an outside consulting firm on an annual or biennial basis. Some way to rather than once and never again, look at these policies and be sure that there wasn't continuing ragged edges. We found in the administration within the Department of General Services related to the local public body program. Is everybody familiar with how that works? That we've got the state self-insurance fund responding to loss to state goods and or loss by third-party suit. We also act as an insurance company, or the state does, the pool does, acts as an insurance company for local public bodies who choose to tie into the program on the tort side only. There were some almost incredibly obvious problems there. There was a three-page contract, for example, which said, in effect, in consideration of the premium, you now belong and we'll respond to your claims according to the statute until this document is canceled. But it never said how you canceled it. and nobody ever canceled one. Even if a local public body pulled out, the contract was never canceled. You know, it was, so they're actually, you know, perhaps still sitting out there, technically in force. There was no record, for example, if the premium was charged. It was then sent to the Administrative Services Division of General Services to be treated as a receivable, like a receivable for paperclips. And it might be 6 months before somebody came back and said to the then risk manager, this has never been paid. And you'd go back to the local public body and they'd say, oh, well, yeah, we had a Board of Supervisors meeting and we decided to buy commercial insurance. But that was 6 months ago. You know, we've had a policy of insurance out there. So these kinds of things, we made recommendations, simple recommendations, to implement cancellation procedures, to implement some kind of accounting procedure to track the receivables. And I don't say this really to be facetious, but again, that the people that were dealing with this had no outside perspective. None of them, these were all things that anybody in an insurance agency, it's second nature that you know, track your receivables and that you cancel policies. But the state was operating with people without that kind of background, and I'm not faulting those individuals, it's just that the perspective was not there.
No grace period.
Pardon? That's
no grace period.
Well, they had a
tremendous
grace period. one that kind of went forever. On the claim side, again, from an internal standpoint, we found several symptoms, if you will. I won't call them problems, but symptoms. For example, they were maintaining duplicate files. File would come in and be set up by an adjuster, and then if it went to suit, that would all be copied and it would be sent to the trial division. And it got a little more complicated if the Portland office were involved, because it might start in Portland, come to Salem, go to trial, and you'd have three files, and a lot of Xeroxes. New correspondence would come in, and it might end up in one of these files, but you had a situation where you never knew what file was complete. Perhaps none of the three were complete. So talking about a single file system, since in a claim or a lawsuit, the file is all that you have. And you know, it must be complete.
You're talking on the justice side now.
On the justice side. On the justice side. We're going to the claim side. There tended to be, because of the structure, backing up a little bit, the adjusters and the claims manager, when one was on board, it's been a problem in hiring and retaining a claims manager. But he was put in a position of, in my personal feeling, a rather difficult position of reporting to the trial counsel. So he reported to the man to whom, in some cases, he was theoretically supposed to be trial prepping a case. In general industry, those functions are usually pretty well separated. The claims management is one function. The claims management function uses counsel, but usually the claims management function does not report to its counsel. Because of this, we had a real over-reliance, I think, on issues of law rather than fact. And we had situations where a file would come in and somebody would say, well, you know, there is a case precedent that says that we're not liable there, so let's forget this and we'll send a denial letter. Notwithstanding the fact that, you know, the issue of law is always fluid, and the issue of law can change in the court, and can change, a jury can actually mold that to some extent. And when it was put aside, there was no further investigation of fact. So we never did find out, you know, there was a claim, for example, that someone was injured, and we said, well, that's not our liability. But we didn't bother to find out how badly he was injured, what the money damages were in case we do get caught, or in case we do subsequently find that, you know, maybe we should, may be in a position of legal liability. We didn't know what the doctor's bills, for example, were to even begin to talk settlement. So there was a real reliance on law rather than fact as a general statement. I don't want to paint it black and white, but we found that to be very true. There's one case which I'll share that it's kind of, I think, even the folks over at Justice chuckle about it. It's the Great Sturgeon case. We had a case where a fish and game investigator apparently went out and saw some people fishing at night. It was illegal and they were not supposed to be out there, so he went out in his boat and they said, we have no fish. So he came back and there was a stake and there was a line. It was a towboat line. He reeled it in and there was a fish on it. So he said, aha, I've caught him, and he confiscated the fish. Well, the next day, allegedly third party, who wasn't out in the boat, comes and looks for his fish and it's not there. And He caught that legally during the day and no problem. So he sued the state for unlawful conversion of his fish. Well, this case was actually tried three times up to the Supreme Court and was remanded back down to the primary court for retrial. The initial prayer was for the value of a fish, and it was decided that, you know, there's actually a note in file that, you know, $1 million for defense, not a dollar for sturgeon. And yet we've spent, I believe it's over $5,000 defending the darn thing, and we found out, when we got into the facts, that this particular deputy, he took that thing home, froze it, and ate it. You know, there really was a, if we got into the facts, we would have written a check for the fish and be gone with it. So this is the kind of thing that we found. We also found, and this is, you know, again, the issue in the insurance industry. I think we tend to, in the risk management, we tend to be more fiscally oriented and perhaps more practical in that sense. And we're willing to sacrifice point of law that, you know, in theory is defensible, but if it's going to cost us more to defend it, why do it, unless we're establishing a precedent that we can't live with. We always have to be sensitive not to do that, but that's the perspective. We also found that because we weren't looking at facts closely enough, we weren't reserving. The claims people were not reserving. If somebody was hurt, they put up what they called a $2,500 reserve. And it was never adjusted when doctor's bills came in or when a prognosis on a back case came in to reflect the real potential liability. So in our estimation, we feel that the reserves, the case-by-case tally of what the claims adjusters felt each case was worth on an aggregate basis was undervalued by about $800,000. Again, lack of attention to fact. The other issue that came up was in the liability claims division was the use or lack of use of contract services. We were sending people to over to Bend, for example, to take a statement on an automobile accident, take them a day to get over and overnight and a day to come back. And the reason they weren't using, say, a public adjuster out there was it was awkward to set up a contract for that one deal. We want you to go out and you'd have to work up the papers. So the recommendation was that on certain classes, perhaps by geographic area or by type of case, that we contract on an overall annual basis, that, say, cases outside the Willamette Valley or Portland metropolitan area be contracted, or cases other than civil rights, so on, if they're just auto cases, that they be contracted. We went through the economics of it, and there are savings available, so that recommendation has been made. We suggest that it be phased in on less volatile, less sensitive issues like auto and so on, and that we hold back on the more sensitive, peculiar issues to state government like civil rights and law enforcement type cases. Jumping a little bit, we've talked about the internal mechanisms at General Services, the internal mechanisms at Justice. There's another issue related to cost allocation, and cost allocation and funding. We found